Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 58 of Season 8 of Movie Our Minute, the Daily Podcast, where we FUBAR our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Alex Robinson of the Star Wars Minute. Welcome back to the show, Alex.
Thank you. Minute 58. This is the big one.
Let's put it this way: it's the peak of this week, you know, hump day, as they say.
Yep.
So minute 58 begins with Hill turning a corner, and ends with Hill taking a rest.
An exciting moment of someone walking across the screen.
Pretty much. Isn't that what people are coming to watch Saving Private Ryan for?
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Well, Star Wars itself has a lot of scenes where it's like two people walk slowly down a hallway having a conversation. The prequels, anyway, have a lot of that.
Yes. But it's, you know, they're science fiction conversations. So.
Yeah, so this is the minute where Paul Giamatti gets
there. You go. That's true. So, the minute begins with Sergeant Hill about to turn a corner, and right before he turns a corner, did you notice that there's a poster behind him?
I did notice the poster. Okay. What is it?
So it says on it, again, please forgive my French pronunciation. I will give an English translation afterwards, but the French pronunciation has a picture of a hand holding up a key. And it says on top, "Vous avez la clef de camps," which translates as "You hold the key to the camps." And then underneath it says, "Travailleurs Francois, vous libérez les prisonniers en travaillant en Allemagne." Now, anyone who knows French is probably laughing their asses off right now. By the way, that I just completely gutted the way you pronounce all that, but what it basically means is you hold the keys to the camps, French workers, you free prisoners by working in Germany. So it's a very interesting propaganda. Apparently there's a whole bunch of them that have been plastered up around here. Mm-hmm. I mean, I found what the original poster looks like, and it's very colorful, but here it's obviously very faded.
Yeah.
Apparently from the rain.
They didn't think that which is their posters.
No, apparently not. I even found it that you can go and buy it online if you really want to. I don't know why someone would want this poster, but okay, that's to each their own. Everyone who wants to be a collector will be a different type of collector. If we all collected the same things, then we wouldn't be able to find what we need.
Were they filming a World War II movie themselves, and so they want to make it seem authentic.
True. But you'd have to know. I mean, I guess maybe they asked Dale Dye. You'd have to know what type of posters would be plastered around a small little French town in Normandy.
Yeah.
See, that's one of the things I love about doing Minute by Minute, that you can just notice these type of things, because when you're watching the movie, you're never going to see this, and you're never going to care, and that's it. It's just, background.
Yeah.
But doing it this way, I'm sure in all the many months of have under your belt with talking about these things, you probably have things that you've noticed that they probably didn't expect anyone to even look at. And
oh, sure, yeah.
There you go. that's why we do this.
When they say camps, I assume they are referring to prisoner of war camps. Prisoners who were captured by the Germans.
Yes.
I'm assuming that's what they mean. Okay.
That's right. It's basically you can help your fellow Frenchmen out.
Right. Got it.
By coming to work in Germany.
Working hard.
That's right. So who knows?
They're in occupied France, so they're basically just saying keep working hard, because you basically are kind of in Germany at this point. So if you keep working hard, that'll free up, will let more prisoners go from the camp, from the POW
That's right.
camps.
That's okay. Right. And it'll, yeah. And so Hill then, as he's turning the corner, he sees something. And it's really cool because when we see him look around the corner, you can see a rifle barrel slightly jutting out from a window over there. So he knows right away, and he goes thunder, and then he gets the response flash. We talked a little bit about this, the thunder, and I don't know how familiar you are with D-Day and World War II and stuff like that. But if you've ever seen The Longest Day, they talk about it a lot. That the code was thunder and flash. Actually, you mentioned Band of Brothers. Band of Brothers, they also talk about it there. That's those were the code words. You know, you say thunder when you see someone, and they have to respond flash before you shoot them, thinking that they're...
I thought that's very odd.
It's odd that they would use thunder and flash, or that they would have a code word?
No, that they would have a code word makes perfect sense, but the fact that it's thunder and flash, which is the opposite of what the order those things happen in when you see them in real life. Usually you'd see the light flash, and then you hear the thunder. So it's weird that they reverse it, but maybe that's part of it, is that by reversing it, they're making it more illogical.
That's right. I think that's the point, because if you use a password, you don't want to use 1234. You want to find something that people are not going to automatically guess. So if you were to say flash, someone might say, "Oh, I'm supposed to say thunder." But if you say thunder, they might not they're not going to think backwards and say, "Oh, I should say flash."
Right.
So I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean the movie right. Exactly. The movie, the Battle of the Bulge, which talks about the whole thing about the German soldiers infiltrating U.S. lines, pretending to be Americans and stuff like that. So, this was one of the things that they dealt with throughout that movie, where they talked about, whether you believe someone is really, is really an American or not. They would ask them who's the pitcher for the Dodgers, the Brooklyn Dodgers at the time, right. Things like that.
Yeah.
That, someone, if they're not a baseball fan, they're in a lot of trouble anyway.
Yeah.
So, but I guess thunder and flash was a little easier to remember at this point, at least. Then we see that the barrel is retracted, and Hill is relieved. And then he walks over and he hears, "Come on in," and then they walk into the way that they do this is a little strange, because they're like talking through the window at first. He'll like standing there, and he goes, "Hey guys, we're looking for Captain Hamill," and they go, "Somewhere down there across the square." Hill goes, "Okay, across the square." And he goes, "Go easy, watch for snipers." And he's like, "Yeah, we just got killed. One of the guys we were with just got killed by a sniper." It's like, it's funny that they're telling him to watch for snipers as they're walking down the street.
I assume that's like I don't know. It seems like an obvious thing to be stating to somebody.
That's my point.
Oh, thanks. I didn't think about looking for snipers.
That's right.
I'm glad you're
here. Why would there be snipers here? didn't you guys clear out the war? That's right. Didn't you clear out the area beforehand? Yeah, I don't know. So it's just, again, it's a little strange. And then Miller's the only one who moves forward. All the others, stand up with their backs to one of the walls, trying to keep themselves a little bit safer. They're all like huddled up, basically. And once again, you can see all the debris and destruction and rubble all around them and stuff like that. And then Miller motions for them to follow him. And then he moves and walks into a much larger area. Again, it's hard to tell if this could be like a courtyard, because it doesn't really look as if it has a roof on top or anything like that. So it must be like a courtyard in between numerous buildings, stuff like that. But the detail here is great. But it doesn't look like it's something, a place that the roof would have been blown off. Don't know. But
Right.
I mean, on one of the walls, you can see that they're like vines that are, that are growing on the wall there and stuff like that. Once again, they just do an amazing job in this movie of detailing everything that's going on here. This is
Yeah.
not the type, this is not the type of stuff that you would expect a movie to take the time to put in. Why do you need vines on a wall? There's also graffiti. I didn't look up what that graffiti means. I don't know if you did or not.
I did not. I didn't notice
Okay.
it, but
No.
okay, that.
Right. There's German graffiti that it says something Deutsch something. I don't know. Maybe it's your mother wears combat boots. I don't know, something like that.
Hey, easy, take it easy.
Exactly. And
A family show.
that is. So Miller like walks in this courtyard and starts looking around, maybe looking for snipers. That could be what he's looking at. And as they move into the area, so Hill then grabs one of his men and he goes, Jimmy T, go find Captain Hamill. Bring him in here. And he goes, what? Up there? He goes, how the hell should I know? Would you go look, please? Thank you moron. Again, you can really hear the Paul Giamatti that we all know and love in the way that he delivers the thank you
Put
moron.
upon.
That's right. It's great.
I looked it up. I looked it up incidentally. A moron, in the technical sense, used to be someone with an IQ between 51 and 74, in case you were wondering. The medical classification of moron, that is one step above imbecile and one step below borderline dull.
Borderline dull. Okay, that's an interesting way that you would
Borderline dull. It's not me, it's scientists coming up with this. I didn't come up with these
I don't
classifications.
I think that's a very dull
So
classification. Borderline
borderline
dull.
dull. Would you rather be dull or borderline dull?
That's right. Wait, is dull the next one? Is it borderline dull and then dull?
Well, it goes, I guess technically it goes moron, borderline, and then dull. So if you're borderline, it means you're between a moron and dull. So you're either a smart moron or a moronic dull person.
Okay.
Anyway.
Do they still use
I
these classifications now?
No, they've changed it to just like average, below average, way below average, that kind of thing.
Oh,
Like,
that's no fun.
oh, I know. Well,
They
I guess
take
the
away,
problem with
they
any of these medical diagnoses, they inevitably trickle down into the mainstream where they become insults to that regular, that people would use.
Right.
You know what I mean? So,
That's true. Yeah, I
yeah.
can see that. I can see that as a problem.
Yesterday's medical diagnosis is to a playground taunt, I guess,
There
basically
you go.
is the lesson
That's
you get
right.
from that
You're borderline dull. Hey, don't
Thanks.
call me that.
Star, don't call it.
At least I'm not a moron.
Yeah. Yeah, idiot is the
Interesting.
absolute bottom of the pile, in case you didn't know.
Okay. And where does genius fall on that? Is genius at the top, or is it
I think at the top is precocious, which seems weird to me. I generally don't
Okay.
hear that except applied to children, so I don't know why. It's very rare you, oh, he's such a precocious adult, So
Interesting.
but maybe the meaning of that has also been tarnished over, dampened over time. I'm a big Paul
Apparently.
Giamatti fan. I enjoy him and everything. I don't necessarily, I haven't seen everything he's done, but when he's in something, I'm like, oh, he's a fun actor to see. And I saw him one time walking down the streets of Brooklyn, so extra points for me.
Oh, very nice. And did you say hello to him at least? Or was that he's just like looking at he's like, oh, there's Paul Giamatti.
There's almost no celebrity that I would say hello to if I saw them. Because
out of
I don't know.
Fear, that seems out like of fear, they would say, "Hey, you're the guy from the Star Wars minute."
No, just out of fear of them being like, "Ugh, like, okay, you know, great, thanks. I, you know, no one stopped me 100 times today to tell me how much they love that thing or that thing." You know what I mean? So I assume every famous person does not want to be bothered by people on the street acknowledging them. So
okay. That's fair. I can understand why there would be a little trepidation there from that type of thing. Makes sense.
But the closest I ever came was I saw Kurt Vonnegut once coming out of a magazine store in New York City, and he's an author I admire very much, and I just make eye contact with him, and for a second he made eye contact with me, and then quickly looked away, and I was like, okay, he clearly does not want to be bothered. So I let him go.
Okay.
Anyway.
That's fair.
Have you ever asked a famous person? Have you ever acknowledged a famous person in a public setting like that?
Well, yes. I spoke to Quentin Tarantino for 2 seconds, trying to invite him onto my podcast when I was doing The Great Escape. And,
where did you see him?
I saw that he was going to be introducing a movie at a film festival that was appearing here. And since he lives in Israel, he does come to film festivals, and I got a seat, and it turns out that, it was, you know, 2 rows away from where he was sitting. And then when he got up 2 minutes before the movie was over and started walking out, so I stood up and shadowed him. And then I said, "Hey, Quentin, I really love your stuff, and I do a podcast. Would you be interested in being on my show?" And he looked at me, and he smiled, and he goes, "No, I'm sorry, I don't think that'll work out." And that was it. And then he walked away. So that's probably the closest that I've gotten to it. I give myself credit for inviting him. I knew the odds were he was going to say no, but he was nice about it, because. You know, it would be very simple for someone like that to be, get out of my face. Why are you bothering me? You know, so, you know, I give him credit for that. You know, I think he made a mistake.
I think wanted to be on my show. You know, lives in Israel.
Yeah, you didn't know that?
No, that's
he married an Israeli actress probably about 8 or 9 years ago, and he lives apparently in Tel Aviv somewhere. And I've even heard stories of people that have gone to movies, you know, and he's sitting there in the theater, you know, just going to check out like a new movie.
That's going to be awkward if you guys keep bumping into each other and you're like, "Hey, do you want to come on the podcast?" And he's like, "No, I don't want to come on the podcast."
Didn't you ask me? Didn't you ask me 7 seasons ago? I'm not going to give up.
Oh, no, that was my brother.
Exactly. No, that was Alex Robinson.
Glorious bastard. Yeah.
Yeah, no, because I knew he was a big fan of The Great Escape, so that's why I wanted to. I mean, I did interview for The Great Escape. I interviewed David McCollum, so you know, I guess that's sort of you know, I didn't see him. I just interviewed him over the phone, but still, you know, that was I mean, you've gotten guys from or people from the Star Wars universe on your show, so you know you've talked to some of them. Not necessarily, you know, you're not in the same room as them all the time, or you know, but still,
right?
Yeah. And then Hill does something really strange. You know, as they're sitting in this area, he, you know, after he makes this guy Jimmy T run away, he basically throws his gun down on the ground. He doesn't even like place it in a place where it's gonna stay up. You know, it just falls completely on the ground. And then, you know, he wants to go sit on a little beam, which doesn't really look very sturdy anyway. And you know, as we talked about a few weeks ago, he was complaining the whole time about how his foot is bothering him and his knee is bothering him and stuff like that. And he starts rubbing his foot at this point. And as he's doing that, the minute ends. And he, right before that, He acknowledges and goes, "You guys just flake out here for a while. Let me get this goddamn hitchhiker out of my boot."
Good line.
I like it. Now, it's funny where he says, you know, you can just flake out of here. Are you familiar with using that type of term? I mean, I was always aware of the fact that you can call someone a flake. I don't know where that fits on the scale of IQ, you know, where someone's a flake, but still, you know, to say someone's going to be flaking out. Are you familiar with that at all?
I mean, flaking out, I guess, like you said, someone who is flaky, you know, "Oh, sorry, I didn't make it. I totally flaked out and, you know, forgot to show up for the recording or whatever." But I'm surprised it's used. It doesn't quite seem the same usage in this context.
Well, okay. So, you know what I mean? So the two definitions that I found of flaking out is one of them is, you know, someone who fails to keep an appointment or a commitment or things like that, which doesn't make sense, obviously. Yeah. But the second one is to either fall asleep or drop from exhaustion. So maybe that's what he's referring to. Maybe he's basically saying, take a little rest for a few minutes, you know, while I get this hitchhiker out of my boot, which is a great way to refer to like this little rock or pebble or whatever it is that he's got stuck in there. You know, I like the way that he refers to it that way. You know, this, you know, it's just hitching a ride. That's all it's doing.
I wonder why, in either case, I can't decide where they, the origin of that.
Of which? The hitchhiker?
Why does flake equal relaxing or either relaxing or you can understand how being irresponsible and relaxing are somehow connected because you're so relaxed that you, "Oh, I flaked out and I forgot to do what I was supposed to do." But why, how did flake come to mean that?
Absolutely no idea. I mean, again, I just looked at the you know, when it comes from. I mean, the only thing that it says here is that these are the American informal slang. So, don't know. And again, the idea of a rock hitchhiking its way through your boot is an interesting one. It's not something that I would normally think to refer to.
Yeah.
So the idea of hitchhiking is hitchhiking. First of all, have you ever hitchhiked?
I have been picked up on the road while walking, but I was not consciously. It wasn't like I had my thumb.
Why would they know you needed a ride? Were you like in some deserted area?
I was, it was in high school and I'd missed the high school bus. So I started walking to the school, which was like about 2 miles from my house. And as I was walking, a car pulled up and it was another student from the high school who I didn't know, but was like, "Oh, are you going to the high school? I can give you a ride if you want to do it." And I was like, "Sure, thank you." And so that was that. So it wasn't, but I've never picked up a hitchhiker, nor have I ever consciously said, "Oh, I'm going to seek out a ride with a stranger."
That's fair. Do you, in how many states do you think it is illegal to hitchhike? Or conversely, how many states is it legal to hitchhike?
Let's say it's legal in three states. Legal in three states.
It's legal in 44
states. Hawaii, Alaska.
44 states.
It is legal?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
That's crazy.
It is legal as long as the hitchhiker is not standing in the roadway or otherwise hindering the normal flow of traffic. But in the six states, in the six states where it is illegal, it's very rare that they ticket hitchhikers. They probably just assume they don't have money anyway. Yeah, so why give them a ticket? They're not going
to
pay.
If they want to hassle and they can, but if they don't, then they don't have to. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's it's like jaywalking.
That's right. There's an example in Wyoming in 2010. They did a study that the Highway Patrol approached 424 hitchhikers. How many of them do you think they gave tickets to?
Zero.
Eight.
Eight. Huh, I wonder what those guys did.
Yeah, exactly. They
were guys.
They probably pissed off the cops. They probably say, "Why are you hassling me?"
Yeah.
Oh, okay. If that's what you want, I'm going to give you a ticket. But the
Yeah,
irony,
or maybe they had outstanding warrants.
could be the irony of this is that 3 years later, Wyoming, it became legal to hitchhike. So
Wow.
apparently they
It's
realized.
a powerful hitchhiking lobby.
Sorry.
It's,
Apparently
swaying the laws
they
there.
decided to change it.
Big thumb.
That's right. They changed it when they realized that the cops weren't giving tickets anyway, so what's the point? Okay, so we're gonna go way, way back in time, 50 years. Okay, in 1974 in California, they did a study by the CHP, right? The chips. Yeah, okay, let's rephrase it. Is hitchhiking more dangerous that a crime will be committed on you than not?
So, meaning like if you have two people walking on the highway, one of whom is hitchhiking and one of whom is not, is the person who is
No,
hitchhiking?
no, no, no. No. The question is Alex Robinson, who is on his way to the Quickie Mart in his
Yes.
car, and
Yes.
Pete the retailer who's walking and trying to hitchhike there, is there more of a chance that something is going to happen to Pete than something that's going to happen to Alex?
Oh, I see. So is the Well, I guess my gut was saying that more likely something would happen to Pete because he's hitchhiking and that's a wild card thing. So yes, yeah, so I'll go with that. That's my instinct is to say it's more dangerous to hitchhike than to drive to somewhere.
Okay, well, according to the study, it was not. They said that it didn't make a difference. They so
So, okay.
and so again, according to the study, it's they actually said it's the opposite, that the actual risk is much lower than publicly perceived. And the results of this study did not say that there's that you should not hitchhike after doing the study. And
Oh, yeah.
they're
Okay.
trying to
I get
find
that.
out if it's dangerous to hitchhike. If it's more dangerous to hitchhike than to drive somewhere. I don't know.
That makes sense because, yeah, and that makes sense because I mean, statistically, most likely you're not going to get killed if you hitchhike, or conversely, you're not going to get killed if you pick up hitchhikers. Because if it was that sure of a thing, then yeah, I see. That makes sense.
Correct.
Yeah, still not going to do it. I don't want to make small talk with somebody either on either end of the thing. I don't want to make small talk with the person who picked me up, and I don't want to make small talk with a person I pick up in the car. So.
Right. Okay. I mean, what they did find in this study was that there were many verbal disputes or inappropriate comments made, between the people in the car, but physical attacks were quite rare.
Wow.
I guess it was like,
That also makes
why
sense.
don't you change the channel on the radio? No.
Right. Yeah. Politics.
Yeah. Exactly. All right, so that's all I have for this minute. Did you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
That's all I got for this minute.
All right, great. So every Wednesday we have a segment called World War II Wednesday, where my guests will give their top five World War II based movies or themed movies, however you want to refer to that.
Okay.
So why don't you once again start with your number five and work your way up?
This one I found tough because I do, as a middle-aged white man in America, it is my privilege and my duty really to be interested in World War II and to learn about it and have strong feelings about it. So I've seen a lot of much more World War II movies than I have Tom Hanks movies. So this one was tougher compared to the past ones, but we'll give it a shot. For number five, I put Conspiracy. Conspiracy. Do you know this one?
Yeah, of course, with Kenneth Branagh.
Yeah, Kenneth Branagh and Stanley Tucci.
Yeah.
And in all my war, in all my interest in war, in all its awful forms, I'm less interested in combat than I am in the behind the scenes machinations of the more of the political things than I am like, oh, this particular battle happened here or that ba battle. So conspiracy is basically a bunch of German bureaucrats sitting around planning, evil things. And to me, that's way more interesting than, a bunch of guys trapped in a foxhole trying to get from point A to point B or whatever.
Okay,
Not to
that's
say I
fair.
don't enjoy that, but yeah. Number four would be Inglourious Basterds. Speaking of Quentin Tarantino, I'm not sure if this one belongs on or not, but I was just going with what my gut was telling me. Maybe replace this one with Schindler's List, depending on your mood. Number three is Das Boot. Das Boot, the German classic of a bunch of guys in a submarine. I think I saw the extended director's cut, but I've not seen the, I guess they did a TV series also out of it relatively in the past few years, have not seen that one. Downfall, the story of the last days in Hitler's bunker and the source of that terrific meme of Hitler freaking out at all his generals in the bunker and yelling about this and that video game release or Star Wars movie or whatever. The guy in that movie is the best Hitler in all the movie Hitlers that I've seen. So it's tough to pull off. I think the movie Hitler is tough to pull off without seeming like you're a guy dressed up like Hitler.
Right. But Bruno, I can't remember his name. Bruno Ganz or something like that. I think that was the name of the actor.
That sounds right. That sounds like we're right.
Yeah. So
I mean, it probably also helped that it wasn't an actor I was familiar with from anything, as opposed to, like, you know, an actor. I can't even think of any actors.
Meaning if Tom Hanks, was playing Hitler, it would be, you know, more of a problem.
Well, I know at one point, I think Anthony Hopkins played Hitler, like Barry Alec Guinness played Hitler at one point, and it's always distracting in those situations that it's an actor I recognize wearing a Hitler mustache. And,
right.
You know, except for Charlie Chaplin, he's the only one to get away with it.
Especially since he had the mustache first. I think Hitler copied it from Charlie Chaplin.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Well, it was parallel evolution. It was, both two. Anyway, so the last one is a movie called Come and See. Have you heard of this one?
It sounds very
familiar. I only saw it fairly recently.
It sounds familiar.
It's a movie from the Soviet Union about the German invasion of the USSR back then in the day. And it's interesting to see a point of view that in the West, I feel like we rarely see. I can't recall seeing any Russian movies about World War II. It's the first one. And it's very personal. You know, you follow basically this 11-year-old boy as he's drafted into service to help fight off the Russians. And man, this is one of the bleakest films that I've seen in ages. I mean, it's basically like the Russian version of Schindler's List, in that it's like chronicling these atrocities that happened as the Germans rolled through the plains of the Soviet Union. And so it's really quite it's, you know, if you're into that sort of thing, it's really well done and, very tense and dramatic. And the fact that it's a really different culture really adds to it has a very kind of surreal feel to it, like a dream-like feel to it, where a lot of scenes of the actors looking directly into the camera and speaking to you as if you were the other person in the scene. And it gives it a very weird dream-like feel. But Come and See. Highly recommended, but pretty, pretty intense. I made a joke when I was telling someone, I was like, it's like Schindler's List, but without the jokes in it. And they were like, oh my God, you think Schindler's List has jokes in it? But you can't argue that Schindler's List doesn't have jokes in it. I mean, there's scenes that are clearly, Spielberg, I just think can't help himself, where like, it's like, you know, like the awful scene where that woman's about to be executed, someone's about to be executed, and the guy's having trouble with the gun, like the gun keeps jamming, and it's a harrowing scene, but it's also a comical scene. Yes. In a weird way. And a little, and thank God, because the movie would be really bleak if there weren't those brief moments of, you know, of slight levity in it. But this one is like no levity. This one's just like, you know, your face is in the mud right from the start. That's number one.
Okay. All right. I see that this from 1985 or so. I have not seen it. I thought that maybe I had, but I had not.
I think it's on the Criterion.
And on IMDb, it's very high on the list of highest ranking movies. I mean, we all know what that list really means, but that's a separate issue. You know, it's number 90 on top rated movies. So,
oh wow, you know,
there are 104,000 people who rated it very high, and it has an 8.3 average. So interesting. Yeah. All right. Excellent. Yeah. So, Alex, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Alex Robinson?
Well, my website is alexrobinson.fun, and there you can find a link to all my creative endeavors, including my most recent thing, which is getting into making music, if you can believe it. Under the pseudonym Alex Super Genius, that's A-I-L-E-X Super Genius, on various streaming services and digital music platforms, you can find my the music I've been working on. Lyrics all by me, music created all by robots.
Oh, wow. Very cool. Well, wait a second. So where did we say genius fits on the IQ level?
That is...
Is that, like, slightly above moron or dull?
It is beneath...
somewhat dull.
Below precocious, but above bright.
There you go. So... You know, we know that you're just not precocious enough.
That's true.
You're only a genius.
Oh man.
All right.
I feel like my mom.
Guess you'll have to live with that. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, earn this.
Find this.
My solitude. You